There'll be some uncomfortable listening for some people in this story, but also some powerful thoughts on what it means to be a woman in this world and the role of anger after trauma. Catherine Hayman has been on the brink of death several times. She's had to work out what kind of woman she wants to be in a world where men have done some terrible things. She's written many books, but her new memoir, Fury, begins with her on the boom of a fishing trawler in a wild storm, trying to stay alive. Catherine, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary. Good to be here.
I'm wondering if you could take us back to that moment on that ship with the sea raging beneath you and you're balanced on this narrow metal beam. What's going on?
Well, we were in the middle of a storm. I was a deckhand on this trawler in the Timor Sea. And what was fundamentally going on was that we were a pretty incompetent crew in a pretty disastrous season. And I was pretty ill-equipped to be on that boom. So the boom is very narrow. We were in the midst of a pretty devastating storm. Dolphins shrieking in a way that I've never heard before or since. Quite terrifying. And my absolute terror. I had to be on the boom. For complicated reasons, there was a set of boards that, if they were not repaired, would kind of pull the boat under. So it was this moment for me as a young woman, I was barely 20, where I had to step into a real physical courage that I didn't know I possessed. And it didn't end well.
No. Well, I'm glad to hear that you survived by the sound of your voice.
I am here.
But the journey there was amazing. I want to step back just a tiny step. Why did you decide to get on this boat? Originally, you were hired as a cook. You did not have cooking skills. You had no deckhand skills. And you decided to get on the boat with these four guys, one of whom you knew a little bit. What was the plan?
Oh, I think plan would be a very generous way of describing what there was. I had I'd left Sydney after a very traumatic sexual assault trial, and I kind of think of it as being a bit like a wild animal. I didn't have a plan. I just had a physical desire to escape. To run, to get as far away from the location of my story as I possibly could. So it was a sort of blind instinct, and I use that word very advisedly, because en route I did actually have an episode of what they called then hysterical blindness. So I'd set off hitchhiking and had an accident on the way and found myself in hospital, blind. And in that moment, my sight gone, everything lost. In that moment, that was probably the moment that I had a more conscious, I am going to create a different story for myself. So that was the degree of the plan. I am going to make a different story. So I got to the end of the land, which was the end of the Northern Territory, and I knew that I still hadn't gone far enough.
Well, I find that really fascinating that you've reached this point where you're able to contemplate creating a new story for yourself, because the backstory, Catherine Hayman, is growing up in a working class family, not much money, unstable housing situation, very difficult relationships. And, you know, you were the only person in your family who had this attachment to books. And you had these people periodically saying, Catherine, you can do stuff. You can be something. You can use this potential that you have. And it wasn't until much later in your life that you were actually able to hear that message, was it?
Look, I think that's true. I think the gift of reading, being a child who reads, being a child who has the luck of having teachers recognize the connection to books, the connection to story, the connection to language, was indisputably a great gift. I think when I look at my young self, my very young self, I think I did have a sense of infinite possibility in spite of all the evidence. And that infinite possibility really came from the weight of all those books, the sense that, well, okay, I can imagine things up. I think growing up female, for many women, and, you know, for me in particular, or from, you know, my experience growing up female, was that over that childhood and into that adolescence, young adolescence and then older adolescence, a kind of bombardment of a, what I think of as a sort of litany of minor and major abuses and unwelcome advances. So I think that had slightly knocked that out of me, that sense of anything is possible if I can imagine it.
And it's amazing to see this huge, powerful, resilient spirit emerging out of this young woman who's so fierce and spiky but so damaged in the course of the book. Tell us a little bit about growing up, Catherine, and the way observing how men and women interacted around you taught you about the value of girls and women and what they should be like.
Well, I grew up in an atmosphere of violence. My father was a policeman, and he was violent. That wasn't publicly discussed, but I think I had a sense that nor was this abnormal, particularly when I was very young. And then, kind of growing up through school, through, you know, high school, again that sense of the silence of women, the sense that, you know, male school teachers who would do that thing that we all talked about, of kind of the bra flicking, where they'd put their hands on your bra and then their finger would just sort of slide under the bra. All of that kind of sense of you are here as a sort of cipher for my vision or for the male world was how it felt for me growing up. And that did to some degree play out in some of the books I read too, a sense of the male kind of big heroic story.
The Kerouacian vision.
The Kerouacian vision. And I swallowed all of that. So really, you know, that's on me.
But I mean, that was our access to literature too, wasn't it, in some ways?
Right. When I look at the literature that I was reading as a schoolgirl, it was very kind of boy's own adventure. Mm. Kerouac on the Road was absolutely one of the books that I carried with me as a talisman for possibility and adventure. And only a little later, only once I'd sort of embarked, actually once I'd got onto this trawler and become kind of strong, I guess, physically strong, building muscle, only then was I able to go, all the women in these stories are these sort of invisible receptacles for this, the vision of these wild young men. They get to be wild questing through the world, and the women get to sort of serve them. And at that point I thought, I'm going to choose a different way.
Tell us a bit more about this, what you describe as the perfect gift of this hard physical labour, because it sounds awful. It sounds smelly and late at night, early in the morning, really intense physical work on this dangerous workplace, but so different from anything you've done before.
Yeah, look, it is all of those things. It is smelly. It is late nights and early, you know, the lack of sleep is brutalising. I think what happened for me was that by the time I got to the end of the land and I met this young guy, Carl, I call him in the book, and he was a first mate on a fishing trawler, and he said, we need a crew and will you come out? So it was the open door in front of me. I didn't really know what I was stepping into, but I did know that I wanted to be at sea. I wanted to get further away. So stepping onto the boat in a kind of naivety, I think, but I think that the kind of the physical work of it meant a couple of things. It meant that, my physical muscle, my strength was being built, and that did create for me a sort of psychological strength. But also when you work really hard, you feel your own capabilities. And I think until I got on that boat, I hadn't really understood my own capabilities. I hadn't really been in a situation where I needed to save someone else. I needed to be a member of a team. And in particular, in that context, I'd got on that boat, as I said, after traumatic sexual assault and a traumatizing trial. I'd got on that boat after being in a situation where I was assessed and effectively found wanting for being female. On that boat, the ocean thief, I was not found wanting. My only requirement was, are you ready to work? My kind of ability to look a certain way, to sound a certain way was irrelevant. So being accepted as part of the team with these men, I think that was incredibly liberating. And it was difficult too.
Yes, because it relies on getting the work right to an extent, doesn't it? But it does sound like there was a suggestion that, oh, well, yeah, usually the skipper does get the cook, but that didn't go anywhere in the end, did it?
Well, it never was going to go anywhere. I mean, look, one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, a memoir of that year in my life after that sexual assault trial and working on this trawler, which was a salvation, was precisely because of the unexpected nature of it. People do ask me, you know, why would a traumatized young woman get on a boat with four men who were strangers and go out to sea and put yourself more at risk? And of course, there are many, many answers to that, some of them to do with how I had learned to value or more precisely not value myself, but also to do with a sense that I had not been safe in other environments. I'd not been safe in the city. I'd not been safe in suburbia. So, you know, why not run at this one? But the crucial thing, and I was not to know this, but it was a true thing, is that these four men, I was in danger many times on that boat. And as you've said, the first moment that I write about is a moment where I did think I was going to die. But I was never in danger from those men. I was never in danger from my crewmates. I was never in sexual danger because I was not their prey. I was their workmate. So it was incredibly important for me, that sense of, huh, okay, the kind of being the recipient of sexual assault or unwelcome sexual advances has really nothing to do with what I'm doing or not doing. It really has everything to do with what the men are doing.
And yet the weight of the evidence in the book was so much, it's almost as if the world was trying to convince you for your entire life that all these things that had happened to you were your fault. There was so much blame floating around attached to you. And I was so struck by what your friend Sylvie said when you said, why didn't you tell me about an assault that had happened to her? And she said, it happens all the time. If we talked about it every time, we'd never shut up. And yet people still seem surprised, Catherine Hayman, when the stories come out from people like Brittany Higgins in Parliament or Chanel Contos in private schools. Why do you think people are still so surprised?
It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've been talking to groups of people in Sydney, in Melbourne, in Brisbane and online in the UK as well. And what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is I talk about the stories and the encounters that I've had, and we talk about this book, and women are nodding, women are sharing their own stories. And I have yet to meet a woman really who doesn't have some story. There will be varying degrees of trauma attached to them. So I think the fact that we've not quite joined the dots until the last few years. It's incredibly painful, this period of time, where we're all beginning to speak, where we're beginning to link up the dots and understand that, ah, okay, that was not an isolated event. Oh, okay, that thing that happened to me, that wasn't a one-off. You start to go, there are these little dots happening everywhere. Now what I can see is that this is a very big pattern. You know, it's that thing of you relate a story of that kind of assault to a male friend. I think this really is changing, but the male friend would probably see that as a kind of, okay, this is a one-off, you know, aberration. Mm. That was an unfortunate thing that happened, but it's very unusual. And you relate it to a female friend, and they'll come with their own stories. So I think now, because we are speaking. And again, that was a really important thing for me, that I came to understand on that boat, that the power of naming, the power of giving voice, giving name, giving form to your experience, that removes it from shame and blame, actually. It takes it places it outside of yourself. It makes it smaller than yourself, and it makes it precise. And it's incredibly powerful. And I do feel, you know, we are all doing that now. So what it sounds like is, this is horrendous. This is happening everywhere. But I would say that's not new. What's new is we're talking.
And Catherine, we don't have much time left, but I have to know, the bit where you're on the boom above the heaving seas, you say it didn't end well. How did you get back to safety, I guess in a literal sense, as the start of the metaphorical journey continued?
Well, I you'll have to read the book. but I think what I will say is that I came out of it very battered and bruised and unconscious.
Wow. But luckily, the path became a tiny bit clearer towards finding that new person. Catherine Hayman is the author of this book called Fury, and this fury burns throughout every page of this book. But it's so powerful and so useful. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you so much, Hilary.
Fury is the book. You're listening to Life Matters. If there's anything you'd like to talk about in relation to what we've discussed today, 1-800-RESPECT is available to take your call. They'll have a chat and help you work out if you want to take things further. 1-800-737-732. 1-800-737-732.